All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we're going to focus tonight a little bit on the Haggadah. Specifically, what I try to do each year is to kind of find the pieces. To find the pieces of the Haggadah that very often go unnoticed, and to be able to spend a little bit of time focusing on them, analyzing them. With the hope of, I don't necessarily have to give you the disclaimer. I don't know if you're going to walk out tonight with a nice vart for your Seder, because this is an hour's shiur, and if you try to give an hour's vart at your Seder, you'll have to be planning a new one for next year. But a new level of understanding. So let's begin with number one. We're going to focus tonight on the concept of yachatz. So yachatz, of course, is the process that we engage in the beginning of the Seder, where again, if you look at number one, yachatz is the breaking of the middle matzah. We have, as part, you know, again, there are different minhagim in terms of where the matzos are over the course of the evening. Are the matzos part of the Seder plate? Are the matzos held separately? We're not going to get into that right now, but what almost everyone agrees with is that as part of the Seder, we have three matzos. The reason I say everyone is because the position of the Grav, the Vilna Gaon, is that you don't have three matzos, only have two matzos, but that's not the norm, because the Grav says it's just the regular din in Lechem Mishnah, but the truth is the normative approach is three different matzos. In years past, we've spoken about the symbolism of the three different matzos, of Kohen Levi Yisrael, of the Avos, which we'll get into a little bit later, but the point over here is you break the middle matzah. And if you take a quick look at the three bullet points over here, we break the middle matzah into two, one piece bigger than the other. Second point, remove the larger piece, now designated as the afikomen, wrap it in a cloth and set it aside. And point number three, the smaller piece of the matzah is left between the two whole matzos. This process itself, we'll discuss the origin of this particular practice, but in number two, the Shulchan Aruch is quite explicit and says, V'yikach matzah ha'emtzois, v'yivatzena l'shtayim. You take the middle matzah, you break it into two, v'yitein chetzya le'echa. Interestingly enough, the way the Shulchan Aruch has it is, and you take, right, you give it to someone. You take the half that is going to be designated as the afikomen, which again we saw is the larger piece, and you give it to someone who's part of the Seder to watch. We'll discuss all these pieces, and we place the afikomen, we wrap it up in some kind of cloth. And the other remaining half, we keep in between the two whole matzos. So we're going to go a little bit out of order. If you take a look at number four, so Rav Lau, in his Haggadah Yachal Yisrael, gives a little bit of a basic introduction, and he says, if you look by the first paragraph, Yikach es hamatzah ha'emtzois, v'yibatzen l'shtayim, we go ahead and we take the middle matzah and we break it into two. Why? Kedei l'kayim mashekosuv lechem oni. Because as the Gemara Maseches Pesachim explains, the Torah calls matzah lechem oni. Now lechem oni can be translated in one of two ways. The first definition the Gemara uses is lechem she'onin alav devarim harbe. The bread which a lot of speech, right, upon which there is much conversation. Lechem she'onin alav devarim harbe, the bread over which we speak a lot. Remember, we spend an entire night speaking all about matzah. The second approach the Gemara uses, which is perhaps the more well-known approach, lechem oni. Oni means oni, the poor man's bread. So the Gemara there says, ma dark, I should have put it on the page, but ma darko shel oni beprusa. Why is matzah called lechem oni? So of course, again, on the most basic level, because it doesn't have any preservatives, no additives, no real additional ingredients. But the Gemara says, we give further metaphorical reference or symbolism to the poorness of this bread by dafka having a half. An ani often doesn't even have a whole matzah, he just has a piece. So therefore, again, on Seder night, when we want to highlight the poverty identity of this bread, we break it in half and therefore recite the Seder over one half. Therefore, says Rabbi Lau, so I'm in number four, first paragraph. So kedei l'kayim mashekosuv lechem oni, shekein darko shel ani le'echol prusa. An ani, again, as we pointed out before, not only does he not have a regular loaf of bread, but even with the matzah, all he has is a little piece. As hamachtis hagedola shel hamatzah yichroch b'mapa nekiyo, zecher l'ma she'ne'emar b'yetzias mitzrayim, misharosam tzururos b'sim losam. So interestingly enough, Rav Lau over here quotes, remember the Shulchan Aruch in number two, which we already saw in number one, quotes this idea that you take the afikomen and what do you do with it? You wrap it up in a cloth. Why do you wrap it up in a cloth? Rabbi Lau says, again, quoting from earlier opinions, this is to symbolize the fact that, remember, the Jews, there's a lot to speak about. Matzah is filled with inherent inconsistencies and contradictions. It's very unclear what matzah is. Is matzah the bread of poverty? Is matzah the bread of redemption? Is it both? The Jews were commanded to bake matzah way before they left Egypt. Right? Remember, we often have this idea that why do we eat matzah? Because Moshe said it's time to go. There was no time to bake off the bread. There's only one problem with that, is that they were already eating matzah hours upon hours earlier when they were eating their Karban Pesach in their homes. So the Gemara says that what did they do? They wrapped up the leftover matzahs. They put it in their... Yeah, like there's a word for it. All right, their thing, right? They went ahead, they put it in their pack. They put it in their pack of satchel. Thank you, right? They put it in their satchel, and they, that sounds too. Yeah, all right. They put it in their misharosam. They put it in their pack that they carried with them. So this image of the Jews taking the leftovers from their Pesach, their Leil Shimurim meal, and they took that with them out of Egypt. Therefore, says Rabbi Lau, that's the Shulchan Aruch means. We take the Afikoman, we wrap it up in some kind of cloth, symbolizing that our forefathers wrapped up the leftovers of their Paschal meal and took it with them out of Egypt as well. It's interesting, some of the Sfardim have a beautiful minhag where they actually take the matzah, put it in a little napkin, and walk around the table with it over their shoulder to symbolize again. Intermarried Ashkenazim. Intermarried Ashkenazim. That is not of Ashkenazic origin. Again, if you want to do a Gagazim to hate, but yeah, it's not real Ashkenazim. Purebred Ashkenazim don't do it. In any event, I'm just saying, I'm not passing judgment, I'm just telling you. In any event, so Rabbi Lau says that's the symbolism over here. We wrap up the afikomen in the cloth, and again, to symbolize the fact they wrapped up their leftovers and went, so too we wrap up the leftover, the broken piece in the cloth as well. And he goes on, he says, if you look at the next paragraph, so again, the larger piece, the larger half is for the afikomen, the smaller half is put in between the two whole matzos. Haminog laniach haafikomen tachas hakar shemesav alav v'yeshenosim osa al kiseyem zech letiasraim. So the second part is what we just mentioned before. Some actually put it over their shoulder in order to reenact the actual Exodus, but the minog seems to be to place it under the pillow on which you are reclining. Okay, now skip back up to number 3 for just a moment. The Beis Halevi writes, because this notion, here's what's fascinating, is already beginning from the Shulchan Aruch says that you take the afikomen, you wrap it up, and you give it to someone. Rabbi Lau quotes the minhag to place it under the pillow. There is this notion, before we get into the stealing of the afikomen, but there is this notion of hiding the afikomen. So where does this concept come from? If you take a look at number 3, in the Haggadah of the Beis Halevi, he writes something amazing. If you look by paragraph A, I apologize, the paragraphs are a little bit confusing. It goes right to left. It's A, B, then C and D. Minhag ze muva b'tor v'shulchan aruch. This minhag to go ahead and hide the afikomen is already brought down in Shulchan Aruch. So in number 2, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't exactly explicitly say hide. The Shulchan Aruch uses the lashon of l'shomra, to guard the afikomen. See, here the Beis Levi says something amazing. V'nira sheyesh bazeh yisod api halacha. It's a very strange practice, especially if you go with Rabbi Lau's verbiage here of dafka placing it underneath the pillow over which you are reclining. What's the pshat? Why are we hiding the afikomen? So he says something beautiful. He says, "Shaladas harosh anu ochlim hayom haafikoman zecher lepesach." So interestingly enough, we know, again, although this is not a shir in afikomen, but the afikomen, the symbolism of the afikomen is this little piece of matzah takes the place of the Karban Pesach. Remember, I think we actually mentioned this, we spoke about this extensively in years past, the Karban Pesach was very unique, and that the Karban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, was not your main course. the Paschal lamb was dessert. It's like a carnivore's dream, right? You know, you have, right, dessert, mamish is the lamb. So, which is also amazing. There's a number of different reasons for that, why it wasn't supposed to be part of the main meal. But the main reason is that if you had to have a whole meal, and then you had to consume an entire lamb for dessert, that necessitated what? A group of people. By definition, you had to join with others. Because no matter how much you like your meat, if you have already eaten a complete meal in order to finish off an entire lamb, no matter, even if you have a very large family, you're going to need to join with others. So to symbolize the Korban Pesach, we have the Afikoman. That's why we ate the Afikoman all the way at the end of the meal. So listen to this. He says, V'hine hadin hu b'Pesach shetzorich shmira. The halacha was that the Korban Pesach required shmira, required one had to keep their attention on it. The Hesech Hadas, Posel Bom, now in the left-hand paragraph where it says B, Posel Bom Mipnei Atumah, something very interesting. After you shechted and roasted the Korban Pesach, there was a din of Shmira. You had to watch over the Paschal lamb. Why? Because you remember, the Korban Pesach was very unique in that you shechted it earlier in the day, right? You would roast it, presumably earlier in the day, but you wouldn't eat it until that evening. Now remember, the Korban Pesach is a korban. Because it is a korban, one must be especially vigilant that the korban does not become tamei. Because what happens if a korban becomes tamei? You can't eat it, right? And having to burn sacrificial meat because it became tamei is a very, very, very serious thing. So therefore, after you shechted your Pesach, prepared your Pesach, you would essentially have to have someone watching the Korban Pesach in order to ensure that the Pesach would not become tamei. Okay, we're going to leave that alone. V'im came. Who adin babasar Pesach shetzarich shmira yisira shelo yitamu also. Therefore, writes the Beis Halevi, one would have to be exceptionally vigilant with the meat of the Korban Pesach that it would not become tummy prior to eating it. Look at letter C. Somebody tummy touches it, a dead rodent falls on it. Letter C. V'lochein hitminu es habasar ad shasachila. Therefore, in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, essentially the Korban Pesach was kept under lock and key until it was time to eat it, in order to ensure that the Korban would not become tamis. Listen to how beautiful this is. Umize nikva minha gisrol ad hayom lahat minha afikoman. And therefore, writes the Beis Halevi, this is the source of the custom to hide the afikoman, shehu zecher the Korban Pesach, tachas hakar o tachas hama'o amapa, shebaze ein chashash tuma vehesech hadas ad shasa achila. So a very beautiful symbolism. So if you understand that the piece of matzah, the afikoman, is supposed to be the symbolic reminder of the Korban Pesach, to a certain degree we take the same measures with the piece of matzah that we would have with the Korban. With the Korban we would have made sure that it was quote-unquote hidden away, kept away, secure, so that it should not become tamei. So too we guard, we secure the afikoman as well in this particular situation by A, wrapping it up, and B, according to what we saw in Rav Lau, placing it underneath the pillow, underneath the cushion over which one is reclining. Interestingly enough, if you skip down back to number 4 for just a moment, the last paragraph in number 4, so Rabbi Lau again quotes over here, Minag Yisrael Shemuva Barishonim Shakitanim Chotfin Esa Afikoman. So far, remember what we've seen over here. We've seen A, you break the middle matzah into two pieces, leave the smaller piece in between the two matzahs, take the larger piece, use that as Afikoman, wrap it up. The Shulchan Aruch already tells us, but it's not just enough to wrap it up, you have to guard it. The wording of the Shulchan Aruch is, you give it to someone to watch. The symbolism behind the watching is, again, the connection between Afikoman and Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach was kept under lock and key in order that it should not become tamei. We keep the afikoman, so to speak, under lock and key. What about the notion of the children stealing the afikoman? So Rav Lau writes in the last paragraph in number 4, Ke'ein remez lazeh matzano b'loshon chazal, chotfin matza b'leilei psachim, b'shvil ha'tinokos shelo yishanu. Interestingly enough, says Rabbi Lau, this seems to be rooted in a motif that we have over the course of the evening, that we do a lot of things in order to keep the children engaged. in order to keep the children awake, in order to intrigue the children, that they on their own come to ask their questions about what's going on at the Seder. So we shake things up a little bit. And one of the things we do is we have the children take the matzah in order that they remain awake. But he writes, V'yishlahasir esaketanim, shelo yatzniu matzah sa'afikoman, tachas hamita, obimakum she'eno naki lagamrei. But one has to be careful to give the children guidelines as to where they should put or shouldn't put the afikoman. He says, for example, putting an afikoman under the bed is considered to be a lack of respect for the afikoman. Or putting the afikoman somewhere that is unclean is considered to be, again, and it ties in very beautifully to the Beis Halevi. Because if the afikoman is really supposed to be representative of the Karban Pesach, and the whole reason why we wrap it up and why we at least initially hide it is to symbolize the Karban Pesach, even if the kids are going to take it, because you want to keep the kids involved, the kids have to understand that the afikoman still has to be treated with regard and with respect. V'yesh makomos she'ein noagin minag zeh. But right, Rabbi Lau, there are places where the minag is that the children do not steal the afikoman. Why not? Kedei shelo lahargil es hayiladim b'gineva. In order that children should not become accustomed to the concept of stealing, of taking things that do not belong to them. So too we are concerned that what? That the child may ultimately place the afikoman somewhere where it should not be. Just so you understand, we have a very special sensitivity. You know, we know that, and this has been the Minhag Yisrael throughout the ages, when we start to teach young children, specifically boys, Gemara, we always begin with the sugyos of Eile Metzios. Right? We always begin with these topics that are in Bava Metzia, which is an interesting thing because Bava Metzia, if you've ever seen parts of it, is not exactly the most intriguing, or for that matter, user-friendly Gemara. So what is it about? It's all about lost objects. Why? So because again, Chazal have ingrained within us that one of the most important things you could instill within a young child is a respect for the property of others. The first thing you have to understand is the world is not your oyster, right? You cannot have anything and everything you want. There are things that are yours, but you must learn to respect the property because again, that's the first piece of being Adam Lachavero. You can't teach a child to really appreciate someone else's feelings because a child, especially a young child, might not understand the notion of feelings or hurting someone else's feelings. But children are concrete thinkers. So if you get them accustomed to saying, no, what you have your stuff and Reuven has his stuff and you can't take Reuven's stuff, that instills a sensitivity towards the other, which as the child matures could also develop into a caring and a concern for a feeling of others and emotions of others as well. So therefore, Rabbi Lau writes that there are many communities that did not have the custom of the child stealing the afikoman in order that a child should not even have a frame of reference with this notion of theft, of taking, saying it doesn't belong to them. If you take a look at number 5, so interestingly enough, Rav Nevenzal, in his Sefer Yerushalayim Mo'adeha, writes something amazing. He writes, Geneva Safikomen, regarding the stealing of the Afikomen, Ra'isi Kasuv, B'Shem Maran, Hagon, Rav Shlomo Zalman, Arbach, Zecha Tzadik Livracha, Shelo Haisa Dato Nocha, Miminhag, Genevas Afikomen. Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach did not like the practice of having children steal the afikoman. Why not? Kedei shelo yisraglu lignov, in order that children not become accustomed, even in jest, even in a playful fashion, from stealing. So look what Rav Nevenzal writes. Velo zachisi lahavin devarav bazeh. And Rav Nevenzal writes, but to tell you the truth, I never understood his position. Shelich ora pashut, Shegneva sa afikoman lo tavi esatinokos lisragila maisa geneva. Rav Nevenzal writes, come on. The kid steals the afikoman on the Seder night, right? That's not going to lead a child. That's not, you know, 15 years later, the kid's not going to say, you know, I robbed the bank because, you know, my parents, they let me steal the afikoman and they put me on the wrong. But come on. He said, it's not geneva. It's all done in jest. It's all done. We understand why it's being done. But tam haminog, shatinokos machdim esa afikoman, vinotlin al zes charam, mipnei shahadavar gorem lahem, lihishar aronim. So writes Rav Nevenzal, the whole reason why we allow the children to take the afikoman, and remember, no one's spoken about it until now, but this whole notion of bargaining for it, right? That suddenly, again, right, the kid is going to extort some kind of reward from the parents for giving back the Avikoman. Says Rav Nevenzahl, we understand why it's being done. It's being done in order to keep the children awake and involved in the Seder. He says, V'yesh shesviru shubichla ma shekasa. Okay. So I'm just pointing out, again, just a couple of sub facts. So now we understand the symbolism of we understand the breaking of the matzah, we understand the symbolism of the wrapping of the afikomen, the hiding of the afikomen, and the hotly contested debate regarding the stealing of the afikomen. But here's what's fascinating. If you look at number 6, Rav Soloveitchik makes a fascinating observation. And the Rav writes the following, B'inyan yachatz, Yachatz eino muskar b'gemara. See, here's what's interesting. The Haggadah as we have it today, this is not a history lesson on the Haggadah, but suffice it to say, the Haggadah did not always look the way we have it today. Right? The Haggadah, for example, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, looked radically different than what it is now. The Haggadah that we have today really is culled from the Gemara. Almost everything that we have in the Haggadah comes from the Gemara, comes from what we call Midrashei Halacha. So the Rav makes a very interesting observation. He says, Yachatz is not mentioned in the Gemara. Right? Dalet Kosos, 4 cups is mentioned, Kiddush is obviously mentioned, Karpas is mentioned, Rachza is mentioned, Hamotzi, everything else is mentioned, Yachatz is not. So where does it come from? Umin Hagenu Lachzos Achas Amatzos. So where does it come from that we break the middle matzah, or one of the matzahs, I should say, because again, even which matzah you break is subject to dispute. We're going with the middle matzah because that's the normative approach. Hu bepiut shechiber Rabbeinu Yosef Tov Elam l'Shabbos Hagadol. So amazingly enough, what is the source of the practice of Yachatz? It comes from a piyut. Now again, so many of us, well maybe we are or not familiar, there's a concept called piyutim. If you look for all of the Dalet Parshios, remember we have leading up to Pesach, we have a number of supplemental Torah readings. If you look in the back of this Siddurim, I think Art Scroll has it also, there are additional tefillos, what we call piyutim, for each of those Shabbosos. The Yekas say many of, the German Jews say many of these different piyutim. Right? Additional prayers for each of the special Shabbosos. So what's interesting is the following. There was a rabbinic personality in the 11th century in Germany by the name of Rav Yosef Tov Elam. You might have heard that name because Rav Yosef Tov Elam is quoted by Tosfos in a couple of different places. So again, a 12th century Germanic scholar, and he wrote some of the piyutim. And in his piyut, in one of the supplemental paragraphs for Shabbos Hagadol, he quotes this practice of breaking the middle matzah. A break in the middle matzah, and somehow, again, over time, this became incorporated into the mainstream Seder. So this is really, which is another fascinating piece about the Seder in general. The Seder that we have today is really a composite of different practices that have been accumulated throughout the years. So Yachatz is probably one of the latest additions that we have as part of the Seder, because everything else really predates Yachatz, almost everything else. I'm not talking about, let's say, the add-on songs, like Chagadya or Echad Miodea. Those come much later on. But in terms of the things that we actually do over the course of the Seder, Yachatz is relatively new. Yes?
If you didn't do Yachatz, where would you have
to come? Take another piece of matzah. Any piece of matzah. Remember, by definition it's like this, because you have to understand, if everybody's obligated to eat a kezias of afikomen, so we know already the afikomen that we break apart is a half a matzah. So generally what do? We try to give everybody a little piece from that afikomen, but anyway, you're supplementing it from matzah from your box, or from matzah from your table. So you have to eat a kezias matzah of afikomen. Who says it has to be that piece? So probably before Yosef Tov Elam, people were just eating up. Well, before Yosef Tov Elam, not so far before that, people were having a Beis HaMikdash, people had a Karban Pesach. But apparently between the Churban and Rav Yosef Tov Elam, people were just taking a piece of matzah for afikomen. So Rav Yosef Tov Elam is the first one to introduce this idea. So again, 12th century Germany, yes.
1,000 years ago, between the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash and when he lived. So during that time, everybody broke the
middle
matzah?
So during that time, no. People, bepashos, were just eating regular matzah, fatikomen. Yeah, people just eating regular matzah. So this is fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating from a historical perspective that such an integral part of the Seder really is an add-on, is not part of the Talmudic process of the Seder. But what I'd like to then do is, obviously, Rav Yosef Tov Elam felt there was a need to introduce this practice, right? Because remember, it wasn't enough apparently just to take a piece of matzah, right, from the box and eat it as afikoman, but you had to undergo this process of breaking the middle matzah. So obviously Rav Yosef Tov Elam felt that there was an incredible amount of symbolism attached to this breakage. What I'd like to try to explore for the remainder of our time together, we went through some of the mechanics, some of the different halachic details, but what is the symbolism behind Yachatz? So if we take a look at number 7, the Beis Yosef quotes a number of different reasons. The Beis Yosef says, Kasava Kolbo, he quotes the Kolbo who says, and some of this we've already focused on before, Haminag Lachalka Kodim Shikra Hagada, Kidishiyomer Ale Halach Ma'anya, Ma'la Ani Beprusa, Afkan Beprusa. So opinion number 1 in the Beis Yosef is that what? Remember, right after Yachatz, what do? We begin Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya means this is the bread of slavery, this is the bread of affliction. So in order to highlight the affliction, slavery, poverty motif within the matzah, kind of ties back to what Rabbi Lau said before, what do? We break it in half. Because the poverty identity is more acutely felt when? When you're saying it over a piece as opposed to a whole. Okay, he gives a second approach. V'yesh omrim, shukadei sheyiru ha-tinokos, v'yishalu, mipnei ma anu matminim ha-matzah, v'adayin lo achalnu. Second reason, and remember, whenever you're in doubt about why we do something at the Seder, the safe answer always is, in order to get the children to ask. Right? So therefore, says the Kabbalah, second approach is, you know why we break the middle matzah? Because it's not as much the breakage. What's more intriguing is that we break it, and we put away half. So the children see, the children say, why are you putting away the piece of the matzah before we've even had a chance to eat any of it? Okay. And third approach, v'yesh omrim, Kedeshelo yiru v'yochlu osa toch ha-se'uda b'shogeg v'lo yihyelo od matzah mishumeres ba'achrona u'lefichach matznin osa. It's a very interesting and intriguing idea. Remember, Shmura matzah, again, I don't know enough of the history of Shmura matzah, but apparently throughout history there were times where there was a concern that a person had enough Shmura matzah to fulfill the obligations of the Leil HaSeder. So there's a concern that what? You may finish up all of your Shmura matzah before when? Before you get to the Afikoman. And the problem is then the consumption of the Afikoman, according to some, you actually fulfill the biblical obligation of matzah, not with the first couple of kazesim that we eat earlier on in the Seudah, but with the actual consumption of the Afikoman. Therefore, it is of extreme importance that we have matzah left over for the Afikoman. So, right, the Kolbo, in order to ensure that there would be matzah left over for the Afikoman, what was done? They would break a matzah in half and put away half. That way, no matter what you eat over the course of the Seudah, we are assured that what? There's matzah left over for the Afikoman. Okay, so these are three different reasons given, brought down by the Beis Yosef in the name of the Kolbo. I'm just throwing out a couple. Yes? Number one was Lechem Oni. Since the next part of the Haggadah is Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction. The affliction, poverty, slavery motif in matzah is more acutely felt when you recite the Haggadah over a broken piece as opposed to a whole piece. I'm just throwing out now a couple of different suggestions for the symbolism. If you take a look at number 8, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach brings down more of a halachic idea. Shebotzim as hamatzah kodim amiras ha'agada, kedei laharos she'anachnu misaskim b'tzarchei ha'achila, v'shegam ha'agada hi mitzarchei ha'achila, u'memela ein kan hefsek bin kiddush l'su'uda. It's very interesting. One of the problems we run into in the Seder night is that there is a large amount of time between kiddush and between the meal. Now, normally, that's a problem from a halachic perspective, right? On Shabbos, if you go ahead and you make Kiddush, and then you decide to go lay down on the couch, right? And you wake up 2 hours later, and now you want to eat your Seudah, what's the halacha? You need to make Kiddush again, right? Because Kiddush is only valid if it's attached to the Seudah. So, right, Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach, on the Leil HaSeder, we have a concern that here you're making Kiddush, and the truth is, it can actually be an hour or two or three, right? Until you get to the Seudah. So Shlomo Zalman Arbach says something amazing. So what did Rav Yosef Tov Elam said? Rav Yosef Elam said, you know what we're going to do? Immediately after we make Kiddush, well, not immediately, but pretty much almost immediately after we make Kiddush, what are we going to do? We're going to break the matzah. Why? Because remember, on a conventional hamotzi setting, breaking the loaf or cutting the loaf is the beginning of the meal. So therefore, Rav Yosef Tov Elam essentially created a process whereby we begin the meal, even though what? We're not going to be eating until much later on. But in order to show that everything we're going to do as part of this evening is not separate and independent of the meal, but in fact part and parcel of the meal, we begin the Seder night with a meal-type activity of breaking bread, of breaking the matzah. Our Suda begins here, and the Haggadah is part of the Suda as well. All right. No, that's again, that's a different thing. In Karpas, and there the Gemara there says also in order to get the children to ask. Take a look at number 9. One last approach before we get into our last two major approaches. The Das Zekinim and Bali Tosa says something amazing. They say, U'bitziasa zecher l'kriyas yamsuf v'yardei shenikva b'pesach. This is quite interesting. The Das Zekinim writes, he says that it's to symbolize the splitting of the Red Sea. Splitting of the Red Sea. Right? Now, why you would choose to introduce this particular symbolism here at the beginning of the Seder seems a little bit strange, right? Because it goes totally out of chronological order. Because remember, the Seder follows a sequence. We begin first speaking about servitude, and then we get into redemption afterwards. That you would highlight Kriyas Yamsuf over here is interesting, but it seems a little bit out of place. Okay. So now we've just thrown out. Remember, we're going with this idea of Soloveitchik. Well, it's not Rav Soloveitchik's idea. It's just an idea. That's Rav Yosef Tov Elam is the one who introduces this practice, introduces this niyug. Obviously, Rav Yosef Tov Elam felt that he did not just want us eating afikoman out of the box, but he wanted us for some reason to do something to break this middle matzah. So why? So again, we saw the three opinions in the Beis Yosef. We saw Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, we saw the Das Zekinim. Take a look now at number 10. So this is from a beautiful Agada by Rav Nachman Cohen. Nachman Cohen is a Rav in Riverdale, New York. A real outstanding Talmud Chacham. So he has over here a Haggadah called the Historical Haggadah, where, again, as you could tell by the title, he delves very much into the history behind a lot of the things that we do in the Haggadah. So he writes over here in 10a, the three matzos are reminiscent of the three temples, right? The three Batei Mikdash. In the second temple, five major components were absent. The Aron, the Urim v'Tumim. Remember, the Urim v'Tumim refers to the Kohen Gadol wore a choshen, wore a breastplate. And on that breastplate were 12 stones, and on those stones were engraved the names of the Shvatim, and it's Machlokes. Some say it's not just the Shvatim, it's also the names of the Avos. Some say it's the Shvatim, the names of the Avos, and the words Shiftei Yeshurun. But interestingly enough, it's not like we normally think that it says Reuven, Shimon, Levi. It was actually all the letters were divided by 12, right? You took the sum total of the letters, divided it by 12, and they were divided up equally among each stone. So the Urim v'Tumim the Choshen was powered by something we call the Urim v'Tumim, which was a piece of parchment with the 72-letter ineffable name of God that was placed in a fabric fold behind the Choshen. This allowed either the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, the king, the melech, or the nabi, the prophet, to ask questions directly of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and for God to respond through the medium of the Choshen, through the letters of the Choshen. Again, the letters would light up, but you still needed a degree of Ruach HaKodesh in order to understand how to arrange the letters in the appropriate order. In the second Beis HaMikdash, the Choshen was there, the breastplate was there, but the Urim v'Tumim, the little piece of parchment, the ineffable name of God that powered it, was gone. Furthermore, the Divine Presence. The Shekhinah was not as physically apparent in the second Beis HaMikdash. What that specifically refers to is, in the first Beis HaMikdash, a fire would come down from Shamayim each day to consume the Karbanos. In the second Beis HaMikdash, that fire did not descend from heaven. Prophecy, there is no Nevuah, and the heavenly fire. I'm sorry. Divine Presence refers to the Shekhinah dwelling between the Kruvim, right? Because remember, in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Aron, the Ark, was not there, as we said before. The Ark's not there. The Divine Presence is not there. Prophecy and heavenly fire, which descended to light the pyre, the Mizbeach. Since these comprise the major spiritual components of the temple, we hide the larger of the broken pieces until the second half of the Seder. So this beautiful symbolism. So according to Rabbi Cohen, then, the three matzos represent the three Batei Mikdash. So what do? We break the middle matzah, which represents the second Beis HaMikdash, in half. Remember, we don't break it in equal halves. We dafka break it into smaller and bigger. And which piece do we take away? we take away the larger piece as the afikomen. Says Rav Cohen something so beautiful, that the larger piece of the second matzah represents the major components of the Beis HaMikdash that were missing in the Second Temple era. And what do? We wait to eat it until the second part of the Seder. Why the second part of the Seder? That portion of the evening, meaning the second part of the Seder, is devoted to future redemption. When we begin the second part of the Seder, we recover that larger piece of matzah to illustrate that in the Messianic era, all of the elements missing in the Second Temple will reappear. A beautiful, beautiful symbolism. So the larger piece represents all that was missing in the second Beis HaMikdash. We eat it in the second part of the Seder, which is the future-oriented messianic era that we represent as the Seder, as if to show that in the third Beis HaMikdash, everything that was missing in Beis HaMikdash number 2 will come back and will once again be present. If you take a look, one more piece by Rabbi Cohen, and then we'll combine both of these to really highlight a beautiful approach. If you take a look at number 11, there's a beautiful Gemara Masech Shabbos. We actually quoted this Gemara in one of our Haggadah Shiurim a number of years ago, but it's a very moving Gemara. La Asid Lavo Yomar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Li Avram. In the future days, this is really referring to the pre-Messianic era. In the pre-Messianic era, Yomar HaKadosh Baruch Hu Li Avram. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu will say to Avram Avinu, Banecha Chat Uli, your children have sinned against me. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam yimachu akedusha shmecha. So Avram Avinu, which is a pretty astounding statement coming from Avram, who argued on behalf of the people of Sodom. But Avram Avinu will say, okay, if they sinned against you, God, then you know what? They should be obliterated. Amar, Amar leli Yaakov dehavi leitzar gidol banim. So God is not happy with Avram Avinu's answer. So what does he say? Let me ask Yaakov what Yaakov thinks, because Yaakov knows what it's like to deal with difficult children, right? So therefore, I'm going to go to Yaakov. Yaakov will be able to appreciate my plight as a father with children who are not listening, because this was Yaakov in his entire life, and he'll give me a better eitzah. God is looking for someone to advocate on behalf of the Jewish people. Amar lei, so Yaakov Avinu, so Amar lei, God says to Yaakov, Banecha chatu, your children have sinned. Amar lefanav, Yaakov Avinu responds, Ribono shel olam, yimachu akidusha shemecha. Yaakov Avinu responds in the same way, if they've sinned against you, then God, erase them. Amar, so what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Lo b'sabi tama, b'lo b'dar diki eitza. The old man has no reasoning, and the young man has no logic, or has no advice. The old man has a reference to Avraham Avinu, the young man has a reference to Yitzchak. So what happens? Amar lo Yitzchak. Yaakov, sorry. Thank you. Amar lo Yitzchak. So finally God comes to Yitzchak. Now interestingly enough, it is fascinating, why doesn't God go in order, right? Because the truth is, if there was one person who would have been expected to say that if the people sinned, they should be obliterated, it would have been Yitzchak. Because remember, Yitzchak's midah is din, he's gvura. Yitzchak is strict justice. So therefore, God, it appears, really avoids Yitzchak, right? It's only now that Avram Avinu said, obliterate us, Yaakov Avinu said, obliterate us, that God is looking for someone to advocate on behalf of the Jewish people. So he goes to Yitzchak, it's Yitzchak, banecha chatu. So listen to this beautiful Gemara. So he says, Yitzchak, your sons have sinned against me. Avram lefanav, so Yitzchak says, ribono shel olam, banai velo banecha. God, first of all, who are you calling my sons, right? They're my children, but they're not your children. God, when they stood before you at Mount Sinai, and they said, Na'aseh v'nishma, when you got real nachas from them, then you called them what? Then you called them my children. Achshav banai v'lo banecha. But now that they've disappointed you, God, you're calling them my children and they're not yours. Listen to this. Listen to this amazing Gemara. Va'od. Kamachatu. And then Yitzchak Avinu says something like this. He says, God, and come on. How much could they really have sinned? Right? How bad could they have been? Listen to Yitzchak's cheshbon. Kamush no seshal. Let's take a step back. What's the normal lifespan of man? Shivim shana. Right? From David HaMelech writes in Tehillim. Man lives, right? A full life is considered to be 70 years. Anything above 70 is gravy, right? It's bonus. Shivim shana. So listen to this. Dal esrin delo anashta alayu. Okay. Take away 20 from that, because we are not held accountable for our actions, right? In the Beis Nishama, the heavenly court, for anything we do before the age of 20. Okay. Pashul chamshin. So now we're down to 50 years that man could really mess up. But now, dal esrin v'chamsha d'leilusa. out of the 50 years, you have to really subtract 25. Why? See, Nabal, you understand the scariness of that statement, right? Yeah, got to take, because 25 years, right? Half of that, we're sleeping, right? By the way, whether that's sleeping on your bed, right? Or sleeping standing up, because people do a little bit of both, right? So we sleep through half of life anyway. So if you're sleeping through half of life, what real damage can you cause? Therefore, what? Pashalu esrin v'chamisha. You're really only left with 25 years that man could really mess up. And we're not done yet. Dal tarti srei upalga. And after 25, you have to take away half. You have to take a 12 and a half. Why 12 and a half? Ditzaluye umechal udibesakise. 12 and a half years are spent what? Davening, eating, and in the bathroom, right? Meaning, in other words, 12 and a half years people spend, you know, like, doing other things where they can't really be getting in trouble, okay? So listen to Yitzchak, right? Pashu lehu tarti sari upalgi. So says Yitzchak Avinu Takadosh Baruch Hu. So tell me, how much trouble can they possibly have caused in 12 and a half years? Right? So out of an entire lifetime, the most we could do is cause trouble for 12 and a half years. So listen to what Yitzchak says. Im ata sovel is kula mutav. So essentially, Yitzchak Avinu says to God, God, just take it for the team. Right? So 12 and a half years, you could absorb that sin. Right? It, out of a whole lifetime, the most man could do, the most collateral damage, is 12 and a half years of wasted sinful life out of 70. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, take it on the chin, take it for the team, and just absorb it. Ve'im lav. And if you're not willing to absorb the full sin of the 12 and a half years, palga alai upalga alecha. God, I'll tell you, I'll accept half and you accept half. And between the two of us, we will absolve the sins of the people. V'imtinsalomar kulam alai. And God, lest you turn around and say that, no, Yitzchak, you should absorb the totality of their sins. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's a no-go. Why? Ha-kerivas nafshi kamach. God, I already took one for the team, right? I was willing to go ahead and offer myself up before you. And so I've done my part of taking the yoke of Klal Yisrael on my shoulders. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the best offer I have for you is the most they can mess up is for 12 and a half years of their life. You take half, I'll take half, and between the two of us, we will absolve the people. So according to Rav Cohn, in number 12, he says something very beautifully. If you take a look, the first part is just an English translation if you take a look at the first part, he says, the three matzos are symbolic of the three patriarchs. So if the three matzos represent Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, then the middle matzo represents who? Yitzchak. And therefore, if you skip all the way to the end, placing but a half matzah to symbolize Yitzchak serves to remind us of this patriarch's continued willingness to sacrifice himself for his descendants. So a very beautiful yisod. We break the middle Yitzchak matzah to symbolize the fact that out of all of the avos, Yitzchak was the one who was willing to accept the burden of sin of the people upon himself in order to attain some level of national absolution. So I think what's interesting about these two approaches of Rabbi Cohen is the following idea. Remember, so we have our first approach that the three matzos represent the three Batei Mikdash, the three temples. We break the middle matzah because, again, there was a significant spiritual piece missing from the second Beis HaMikdash, and we eat it at the end of the meal. We bring it back to the table at the end of the meal representing the transition from the Egyptian redemption to Messianic redemption, symbolized by then the third Beis HaMikdash. All of these lost elements will come back. Second symbolism, three matzahs represent the three avos, that Yitzchak Avinu's willingness to sacrifice for the Jewish people, willing to shoulder half of the national sin, willing to take upon himself half of the averus of Klal Yisrael. We break the Yitzchak matzah to symbolize the deal he, so to speak, struck with God in order to maintain our national continuity. So it's interesting, the common denominator between these two approaches, what comes out is, the fascinating aspect of the Haggadah, we're going to speak about this more on Shabbos Haggadah, is that the Haggadah is a constant tug of war between past, present, and future. We are constantly transitioning back and forth. Even though the beginning of the Seder is supposed to really focus on the past, nothing remains rooted in the past. You'll go through the Haggadah, you'll see. Even when we begin with Halach Ma'anya. So how do we begin? Halach Ma'anya Diachalu Avasan Barad Mitzrayim. Right? We speak about the past. And then what's the next line? Kol Dichvin Yesev Yecho. Right? Whoever needs a place, come and eat. Which is what? present. And then we say, Hashata Hacha Lashana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael. And then what do? Future. The Haggadah is a very restless book. We can't remain in one place. We can't stay in the past. We can't stay in the present. We can't stay in the future. We are always transitioning back and forth constantly throughout the entire Seder. And perhaps what Rav Cohen is really highlighting over here is that Yachatz sets the table for this tug of war. Yachatz is the first thing we do in the Seder that shows us that we are constantly going to be going back and forth between past, present, and future. How so? If we go with the first symbolism, the three matzahs representing the three Batei Mikdash, so what do? We remember what we had, matzah number one, first Beis HaMikdash. We remember what we lost, breaking of the second matzah, second Beis HaMikdash. And we remember what? What we will have again in the future. So Yachatz creates what we call this historical time continuum, which Rav Soloveitchik calls unitive time consciousness. This idea that the Jew exists on all levels of time simultaneously. We are past, present, and future all at the same time. And yet, this again, you'll take my word for it. Well, don't take my word for it. You'll go back and you'll think about this over the Seder. This plays out in every single stage of the Seder. And Yachatz sets the table for the unitive time consciousness. We remember what we had, we remember what we lost, we remember what we're going to get back. Same idea, going according to the second symbolism of the three different matzahs representing the three different avos. So what do we say? We are remembering what? The sacrifices of the past. We remember clearly the sacrifices that we make in the present, and we also recognize that we will still be called upon to make many sacrifices in the future, right? The sacrificial identity of the Jewish people is not by any means ready to be retired. We are all called upon to make sacrifices in our personal lives, to make sacrifices in our national lives, until we get to the ultimate geula. So it comes out again, by combining these two approaches, not really combining them, but they have a thematic common denominator, which is that the power of Yachatz, what Rav Yosef Tov Elam was giving us, was setting the table for the Haggadah experience. The Haggadah is all about simultaneously living in past, present, and future, and that is all symbolized through the Yachatz. If we take a look at number 13, another approach. These will be these last two sources will serve to create one final approach for Yachatz. So here, this is the Haggadah Shal Pesach of Rav Shlomo Aviner. His commentary, Rav Shlomo. Shlomo Aviner is the Rosh Yeshiva of Ateret Kohanim in the Old City, in the Muslim quarter of Yerushalayim, and he's also the Rav of the community of Beit El. And an exceptional Torah scholar. See, he came out actually not so long ago with a beautiful Perush on the Haggadah. See, he writes over here, Yachatz. Hachelik hakadon shesamim bein shtei hamatzos hashlemos. All right, we're already experts in Yachatz already, right? So we know we're going to take the piece of matzah, the smaller piece, we're going to put it between the two whole pieces. Hulechem oni shein darko shama ani elalechol prusa ketana. So Rav Aviner asks a very fundamental question: Amnam ata zman chirusenu lo zman oni ela zman hisrachvus vhisangus. So says Rav Aviner, again, and this goes back to the more fundamental contradiction that exists within the Seder. The Seder is all about what? Celebrating freedom. Remember, we already drank the first of the four cups, which is more than just simply a kiddush, but is again supposed to be a behavioral manifestation of our newfound freedom. And yet, so it's supposed to be a night of expansiveness, right? He says, lo zman oni, not a night of poverty. El zman, va'achalta v'savata ma'angeha li'olam kavod yinchalu ve'ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu soni asagof ve'ein lanu inyan b'sagfanus v'yesh lalos es hamazon. Kula ala kodesh. Im kain lama lachzos es hamatza lahagbil uletzantzen. So asks Rav Aviner, on the night that's supposed to be all about freedom, on the night that's supposed to be about expansiveness, on a night that's supposed to be about physical enjoyment and freedom as well, why are we scaling back? Right? Why are we taking away a piece of the matzah? If anything, I would have thought that what? Let's add a matzah, right? Symbolizing our cheirus. Let's add to the bounty. Let's add to the plenty. Why are we taking stuff away? So look what he says, very beautifully. Ela sheterem haygo higanu ledargozu shekol peulasinu haenoshius misromamus ledargosh kedusha adayin yesh banu tzad behemi sheyesh lahagbilo uletzamtzamo. Because says Rav Aviner, that part of the essence of the Seder night is that we go through a process of refinement. We go through a process of somehow refining and putting in check our basic animalistic desires. Yesh losim resen al kochosinu hatavoyim, the af al koach ha'achila, kedesh lo yisrachavu le'ein gavul. You see, there's a danger to freedom. And what's the danger of freedom? Excess. Excess. The danger of freedom is excess. The danger of freedom is losing yourself in your freedom. Not knowing how to properly manage your freedom. Freedom without boundaries, right, is not freedom at all. It's a perversion of man's abilities and energies. So what's the first thing we do on the Seder night? On the night that we are celebrating our freedom, what do? We create boundaries. And how do we create boundaries? By removing a little bit. The way we refine our newfound physical freedom is not by adding more, but is by taking away a little bit. Sheish lahagbila ulitzamtzamo. He says, Terem iganu ledargo sheachila atzmo yavodas Hashem alyona, kachila sakarbanos, ve'ata alinu litzamtzamo, kefia hechrich likiyum gufenu, achila nikia utahura, so later on, and we're going to talk about this in number 14 in Rav Kook in just a moment. Later on, we'll get to the heightened form of eating. But now, when freedom is new, we have to make sure that the newfound freedom doesn't turn into a celebration of excess. So how do we keep ourselves in check? By removing a little bit of what was on the table. By taking a little bit of matzah off, what we are showing is we are going to keep our newfound chiras, our newfound freedom in check. We're going to keep it holy. We're not going to splurge on the unnecessary. We're going to keep things all within the framework of that which is appropriate. Now take a look at number 14. Rav Kook takes this theme. Interesting, Rav Aviner happens to be quoting Rav Kook, although not the same piece that we are quoting in number 14. But Rav Kook takes this theme in a little bit of a different direction. We're not going to read all of it. I'm just going to highlight a few pieces. So look what he says by letter A. Yachatz. Acharei hisromimus hanefesh lema'alas hakidosha. Now that the soul has been uplifted to such a lofty level, lo'osa hama'ala shemekadesh es gamkein es etzem ha'ana'a va'oneg, hamakeres es ha'achila lo l'shem hechrech, she'en lihi malit mimenu levad, kiim od lidavar tov hamosif gam bi'inugo tov v'kavod. So says Rav Kook, part of the beauty of the Leil HaSeder is that we recognize that what? That even the physical processes that we engage in are not devoid of holiness. Right? That everything we do, even like an act of eating, can be a form of avodas Hashem, a form of service of God. And he quotes Ma'angea li olam kavon yichalu, mipnei shegam ha'oneg, hu mechaya hamon kochos v'ragshos, she'ina mis'aril metchia rak bederach ha'hechrich, nimsa, kimo sha'hechrich mekayim u mechaya es ha'nefesh, bechlal kein ha'oneg mechaya es ha'gzragshos, v'kochos ha'misrachvim. So look at the act of eating. On one hand, a person has to eat in order to sustain their physicality. Right? I get hungry, I have to address that need, because if I don't address that need in a timely fashion, or if I don't address that need often enough, it'll compromise my physicality. So one could look at eating simply as like putting gas in the car. The car doesn't run without the gasoline. The body doesn't run without heat. But says Rav Kook, there's another level to this as well, where that eating itself could create the foundation for spiritual activity. Skip down a little bit to letter C. He says, Al kein, tzorech laharshim es hayisod hakafel, shebekoach ha'achila haratzuya. Therefore, says Rav Kook, in reality, there are two different forms of eating. Number one, ha'achila l'te'avon. Achila l'te'avon means what? You eat, why? Because you're hungry. You eat because you're hungry, right? You're right, you need to satisfy a physical or biological need, so you eat. L'chila l'te'avon. Achilas ha'hechrich ha'ba'ami nefesh re'eva. Right? You're right, yeah, your stomach is growling, you're hungry, you have a desire to satisfy that need. The achila al hasolva, achila l'shem oneg. But there's another type of eating as well. What we call achila al hasolva. Now that literally means what? Eating when you what? You are already satisfied. eating when you are already satisfied, and that is considered to be achila l'shem oneg. That's an act of eating for spiritual delight. L'shem harchavas ha'chaim ha'ola u'miskadeshes b'haramas karen ha'chiros ha'amitis b'das u'beregesh u'remasa. There's a second form of eating where a person is not simply responding to a biological urge, but rather, why is a person eating? Because the eating in and of itself constitutes a form of service of God. Turn the page. He says the following. Ubiyoser, letter D. Ubiyoser tashlin, ha'istachlus, ba'hachatos hamat l'shte achil yosel. So what do we do in yachatz? We split the matzah into two distinct forms of eating. Shagam achilas ha'chol achrechis, einena mufredes v'omedes la'atzmo, mi baladei achilas hakodesh shehi teudasa she'ilat tavo. Just skip the letter E and then we'll explain this. Klolo shel davar mishnei mine ha'achilos basamasam teitze ha'ashlama haba me'aras shtei machtios ha'aras yachatz. So listen to this, it's an astounding idea. So says Rav Kook the following yisod. What do? The essence, what's the essence of the sefer? And this, by the way, is not a simple question. But according to Rav Kook, if you had to summarize the Seder experience in one word, what would it be?
Freedom. Transformation.
All good answers. Right? Long. Okay. Well said. Right. The truth is, the amazing part of the Seder is an exceptionally physical experience. Right, everything we do is very interesting. The Seder really doesn't have any pure spiritual component. Right, everything we do in the Seder is physical. We drink, we eat, we lean, we drink, we eat, we lean, right? And we repeat this process over the course of the evening. Meaning, you contrast it, let's say, with a Yamim Noraim experience, which is really an experience divorced from physicality. Here we go ahead, and what? It's a physical experience. Because, says Rav Kook, you know what the entire essence is? The essence is to show that the true nature of freedom is the ability to sanctify the physical and the mundane. You see, a slave eats why? Because he's starving. And he tries to pack in as much as he can at any given moment. Why? Because he never knows what the next moment is. There is no spirituality in the care of the physical, because essentially the slave has been transformed into a beast of burden. So he needs to fuel the car, because otherwise he'll simply crumble under the weight of his load. Says Rav Kook, the entire essence of the Pesach Seder is to take the physicality of man and to lift it up from the physicality of the slave into the physicality of freedom. And how do you do that? By endowing the physical with spirituality. So listen to this. Says Rav Kook, and where does this process really take physical form? In yachatz. Because look what we do in yachatz. What do? We take that middle matzah. Now remember, what do with that first piece of matzah? The part that stays between the two larger pieces. What do with it? Right? We eat it. We eat it when? By hamotzi. Now remember, how are you usually feeling when you get to that first kezayis matzah? You're starving. So, Mamash, when you get that matzah, it does not matter if it's this year's shmura matzah, last year's shmura matzah, right? You are ready to eat anything that comes your way. The first half of that matzah, writes Rav Kook, symbolizes what he called eating l'te'avon. It's biological consumption. It's biological eating. I'm hungry, I'm starving, and if you kizai samatza, never looked better than it does on the night of the Seder. But that's basic human consumption. But remember, we have a second part of the matzah, right? What do we do with that matzah? That's the afikomen matzah. And when do we eat that matzah? When you're full. You eat that matzah lit oven. And why are you eating that matzah? For one reason and one reason only. Because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because of Oneg. That is an act of consumption that is not done to satisfy a physical urge. It's not done to drown out the groaning of my stomach. It's not done because, oh, I really need another piece of matzah. No, the truth is, I'm okay, I'm fine, I'm satiated, I'm alright. You have to leave room for the afikomen. I'm happy to eat it, but I don't have to eat it because I need it. I don't have to eat it because I'm hungry. I'm eating it because I'm using my physicality to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And here in Sez Rav Kook lies the power of Yachatz. Within that middle matzah, we have the contrast between the two dimensions of man's physicality. The first, smaller half, which we leave in between the major two, represents Achila Lete Avon. Basic, human, almost slave-like consumption. I'm hungry, I need to fill the need. I need to quench my hunger. Second matzah, the one that's wrapped up, left until later, the bigger half, Avikomen, Achila Shel Oneg. An act of consumption that's done, a physical act that's not done because of some kind of physical need, a physical urge, but a physical act that is done as a form of spiritual service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So in reality, according to Rav Kook, what comes out is something exceptionally beautiful. And Rav Aviner fits into this very beautifully as well. Rav Aviner framed it more in terms of the withdrawal from the physical. Rav Kook sees it more as a refining of the physical. That in reality, what Yachatz really represents is the Yachatz sets the table for the entire evening. Yachatz sets the stage. What are we supposed, we always wondered about this, what are we supposed to accomplish over the Seder night? And the answer is, we are supposed to redeem our physicality. We are supposed to uplift our human physical side. We are supposed to endow a dimension of Kiddusha in what for 210 years was a simple, base, almost animalistic physical existence. And how are we going to do that before we even say a word? Before we even begin Agada, what do we do? Rav Yosef Tov Elam, in his great infinite wisdom, said what? Break the middle matzah. One part will satisfy the human urge of hunger, right? And the other part will represent the elevation of the physical, where man uses his body in such a way that I'm not just simply satisfying an urge, I'm not simply taking care of a need, but rather what am I doing? I'm using my physicality, I'm using my body, I'm using every aspect of my physical identity to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So if we bring this all together, what emerges is something absolutely spectacular. That what we normally look at is just like, you know, a nice way to entertain the children, really is much more than that. Yachatz becomes the metaphor for the entire Seder experience. If you had to pick one thing out of the entire Seder that captures the entire essence of the evening, it truly is Yachatz. Remember, we're not going to go through all of them again, but we started this evening by going through all of the various symbolisms, but we also merged with two major symbolisms. Yachatz captures the unitive time consciousness of the Seder. Yachatz captures this essence, that the whole essence of the Seder is our ability to mimic HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to live in every dimension of time, past, present, and future simultaneously. So we either do that with symbolism of the Beis HaMikdash, remembering what we have lost, right? What we had, what we lost, what we will gain. Remembering the sacrifices that have been made, the sacrifices that will be made, and ultimately redemption of the physical. Realizing that the entire, how do you show that you're free? By making sure that our physicality does not look slave-like. Slaves can't redeem their physicality. Slaves are slaves to their physicality because they have no idea how to sustain it. The ability to sustain their physicality is not within their control. Therefore, all they need to do is feed the machine, put gasoline in the car. The entire essence of Yachatz teaches us the Seder of Pesach is to redeem the physical. And that contrast by Yachatz, part of it will represent the regular Achila L'Te'avon, and the other part will represent our Achila L'Oneg, the use of our entire physicality for the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we should hope that Emir Tzashem, as we break the middle matzah this year on Pesach, we recognize the incredible profundity, symbolism within this act, and we should be zocha. We should be zocha to have a night that is filled with our personal and national past, present, and future. And we should be zocha that by the end of the Seder, we've uplifted not just our neshamos, but our bodies as well. Okay. There's no shiur next week. This will be the last shiur until after Pesach.